Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to episode 84 of the Talking Friars podcast. Ben Fadden here today, lockout still, with Jacob Redondo. He was a former teammate of mine, so I big Padre fan, so figured to get him on here during this offseason. Jacob, what's up? How's it going?
I'm good, man. Ben, best second baseman I've ever played with. Gotta say it.
That's right. All right, so let's first start off kind of just background on yourself. How you kind of became a Padre fan, and kind of what your best memories are, you know, thus far.
I'm born and raised a Padre fan. I'm always like a local boy. I was raised a Charger fan until they left. This is going to sound weird, but I'm a Clippers fan, even though they left. Didn't really seem like San Diego wanted to keep them anyways in 84. My first ever game was Tony Gwynn's last game. And I don't even know if I was a month old yet. So I didn't really get a choice, but I'm really glad I'm a Padre fan because when we win, it's going to feel good.
It's going to feel better than like the Dodgers because we haven't had it. So, yeah.
Blowing it every year doesn't really sound too good to me.
Yeah, exactly. What about your favorite memories, favorite memory this far? Would it be the Musgrove no-hitter or what?
From last season?
Yeah.
I would say the Musgrove no-hitter because I missed the first inning because I was on my way home. And, I saw the whole game. I remember it, like, perfectly. I remember Grisham just came off the IL from a hamstring. And then around the sixth or seventh inning, I'm like, man, no-hitter? But, like, I've seen this many times before. Jordan Lyles blew it. I remember Odrismir Despaigne blowing it after he pulled his pants down for some reason. I remember everything like that.
Edwin Jackson had one pretty
Edwin
close.
Jackson, yeah. He was pretty good when he was on the Padres. Yeah. But anyway, what I was saying is I love that moment because I was watching it with my dad and my stepmom, and my dad actually ended up crying when it happened.
My mom went nuts, yeah. I was keeping score, and I was like, holy cow, like, I don't see any hits here, like, and they kept showing the scoreboard, and then Don, you know, mentioned it, and I was like, oh, here we go, this isn't, you know, it's one of those jinx type things. And then, but once like the line out, I think to Jake in the ninth inning, that was when it was, or no, to Myers, the line out to Myers, it was like, right. Okay, yeah, it's gonna happen,
right?
Like, yeah, I think so, yeah, that's gonna happen, like, it's gonna happen, like, there's plays where, you know, if there's no special play that happens, it's kind of like, okay, the no-hitter's not going to happen. But when there's a special play or a play that, you know, needed to be made, it's kind of like it was, like, meant to be. Like, I remember the Mike Fiers no-hitter. I think Semien made, like, a diving play. This was a couple years ago. And it was like, okay, it's going to happen because that tough play is already out. It's already happened.
Right.
So, yeah, that was the closest I've ever felt to, you know, winning – or NL pennant or winning a World Series. So yeah, definitely definitely a cool moment. Before getting into this current Padres team, I don't know if you saw in my last episode about Tony Gwynn, and it was kind of mind-boggling. I was just sitting around my house, and it was mind-boggling. He never won an MVP, and so I just went through all the stats, all the years of him, and just comparing him to the guy that won. And, you know, 1987 was like his best chance. He had, you know, I know WAR wasn't a big, you know, wasn't really a thing back then, but he had blew Andre Dawson out of the water in that. 1995 was a close one. I guess my question to you is, are you kind of surprised like me that he never took home an MVP despite being one of the greatest hitters of all time?
I actually, so I did listen to the podcast. I actually disagree on the year, though, that I think he should have won it.
Okay.
I definitely think the year that Ryan Sandberg won it in 84, that should have been Tony Gwynn's year.
Okay.
And I say that because he's in his second year in the league, right? And he's taking the Padres to where they've never, ever been before, the playoffs. And it's only happened five times, like five or six times in our whole franchise's history. You can't tell me a guy in his second year taking – it's just like Tatis taking the Padres to the playoffs in 2020. You can't tell me that's not valuable. And I'm a stickler for value when it comes to most valuable player. Like, I was disappointed Tatis didn't win MVP last year, but I don't think any of the three should have won it. I think it should have been Austin Riley, because he had a monster year and he took him to the playoffs and eventually they won the World Series.
Okay. Yeah. The only thing I'd say in 84. Okay. So that I mentioned in the episode, that's the highest he ever placed, which is also mind boggling. Third place, the highest he ever, you know, placed. Yeah. He played two more games than he did, but his WAR was two wins less. He led the NL on average. So that's a big and on base percentage. Well, he had a better on-base percentage than Sandberg, but slugging percentage was much lower. Home runs was much lower. RBIs was much lower. And I get – and so I think they kind of compared, you know, back then, you know, WAR wasn't a big thing. You know, on-base percent, OPS, those things weren't big. It was just the, you know, the home run RBI stats. So I think maybe just based on that, I think maybe some voters were like, okay, yes, the better, you know, old school stats, Ryan Sandberg kind of had it better than Tony, but like there were some years where those old school stats that were being used, Tony had that over the guy that won. And then he placed like eighth or ninth that year. It wasn't even like he placed, you know, top three like he did in 84.
Right. And then also, I mean, the other year when he hit 394, I mean, there weren't playoffs that year. So anybody should have been up for grabs. And I've never seen anybody hit 400. You've never seen anybody hit 400. How is that? I mean, Jeff Bagwell won it that year, right?
Yeah.
See, I don't find that very – I mean
– yeah, so in 94, Bagwell's average was 368, so it was still really good.
Right.
451 on base percentage. Tony's was 454, so they were close. They both played the same amount of games. And then I think what maybe
home runs, right?
Yeah. So Bagwell had 39 home runs. Tony only had 12, and then Bagwell had 116 RBIs. Tony had 64. So it was a big gap there. So I could see why they went the way that they did. But like I mentioned, 94 was probably the third, if I had a number three, like year that he could have won, you know, 84 is a good one too, but just because of the history and how historic that number at hitting 394 is, especially back then. Like back then, that was the big stat. Average, what's your average? That was the big stat, where now it's kind of like WAR, OPS, home runs, stuff like that. But yeah, it's an interesting you know, conversation with Tony. And it's just, I mean, you know, 96, Tony didn't have a great year. Ken Caminiti blew him out of the water, but obviously I'm gonna be fine with that. It was a Padre, you know.
Right. I think he was riddled with injuries that year too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he was in the last 2 years as well.
Yeah, that did kind of hurt him during his career. And obviously he wasn't in the greatest shape, you know, that, you know, like the second half of the year. Right. But he was still hitting, like, so but let's move to the current team. What was your reaction to AJ Preller bringing in Bob Melvin? Obviously we, you know, that name wasn't, you know, brought about. It was good to see Tingler gone. Obviously, I was not a fan of that. You know, I think it was my junior year of high school. when that happened, and I was not a good person to be around when we had Ron Washington just sitting right there. But what was your reaction to kind of the Tingler tenure and then Bob coming in?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing, well, I'm really excited about Bob Melvin, and I like what they've done with the coaching staff. Everything we've done so far, I want to say we're on the down low winning the offseason, because it wasn't, we didn't need to make that big move, which we still might with the rumors of Castellanos or Bryant, but like, we don't need that big move. We needed addition by subtraction, and wink, wink, Eric Hosmer is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I'm really pumped that they brought in Bob Melvin, because from the interviews I've heard, he focuses on trusting the starters and not relying on the relievers as much. And I think that was the main issue last year, along with injuries. And if you get a full season of Tatis, 150 games or so, and you can get those starters going deeper into games, I think we're set.
Yeah. And you know, the team of the offseason probably this far is probably the Mets, just in terms of moves that they made.
Right.
But the Mets had a bigger gap to make up than the Padres did. Even though, you know, the Padres obviously had a losing record last year, the Mets, they just have more flaws. They don't know about DeGrom. And the Padres, really a big key, it's not really like adding players. It's keeping the players that they have just healthy. Like, right. Imagine if Snell was healthy, if Darvish didn't have those back and hip issues, and Tatis didn't have the subluxations, which that's why I thought he should have got surgery, but that's kind of another topic. But you know, it's just keeping guys healthy, and hopefully, maybe, I don't know about the training staff or whatever, but just hopefully they can have better injury luck. Cause, and I just don't see those injuries happening again. I don't know about you, you know, back to back seasons.
Right. And another thing is, I mean, we're getting Clevinger back. That's already like a big free agent. One thing too, I will add, is he's pitching with a pitching coach named Dom Johnson in Poway. And I used to pitch there as well. I used to pitch there with Joe Musgrove.
Oh, okay.
Expect a nasty changeup from Mike Clevinger, because that's that pitcher's, or that pitching coach's specialty.
Is you that the videos that he's posting on Instagram kind of looks like a, just not even like rich place at all. It's just a mound. Oh,
there's two mounds, and it's a nice house, but there's two mounds in the backyard, and he's throwing gas back there. Like a lot of guys do. Matt Bush had his comeback there. Do you know Chris Davinsky?
Yeah.
Yeah. He has one of the nastiest changeups I've ever seen in my life. He works out back there, and Musgrove does as well.
All right. Expect a nasty changeup. Okay.
That's my prediction.
So, sticking with Preller, do you think that, you know, this is time for him? The Padres have to make at least the playoffs and a deep playoff run consistently over the next few years for him to keep his job, despite the, you know, contract extension Seidler gave him?
Yeah, that's the tough thing. I think this year is a make or break for AJ, unfortunately, because I do like all the moves that he makes. It's really just, I feel like it's the development and the coaching. It's not really him, because I feel like he's finding the talent. Because we've seen these guys like Urias go over to other teams, hit 20-plus home runs. The only thing I would critique Preller on is he gives up on players really quickly.
Yeah.
And I mean, we would have Max Fried. He gave up on Renfro. Renfro had a monster year. And I know he didn't like being here his last year, or else I would have said, hey, let's go get Hunter Renfro to play left field, because that's a cheaper option.
Taylor Trammell kind of irked me. He didn't even play a full season in the minor leagues, and he just trades him. Like,
right. And then don't get me started on Ty France.
Yeah.
That was the worst AJ Preller trade I think I've seen so far.
Yeah.
Cause Munoz is going to come out next year as their closer eventually, whether it's in the beginning of the year or the middle of the year, he's going to be throwing 100+, and it's going to be electric.
Yeah. I think that I disagree with it this year being the year because of the new coaching staff and everything. Right. I think that if something doesn't work out this year, then they're going to say, okay, let's give one more year. You know, Myers probably won't be here after next year. Like, just see any new additions that happen at, you know, next off season. I think so. If if there's not success the next 2 years or a deep playoff run by next year, I think unfortunately, I don't think Seidler is going to make a move, because from everything he said, oh my goodness, he's like married to Preller. So
I'm thinking it's going to be more of a like step down type of thing if it ever does happen. I think they'll be okay next year though. In 96, they made the playoffs, had a crazy run, if anyone wants to look that up, to sweep the Dodgers, take the division. Then they got swept in the playoffs by the Cardinals. The next year, they had high expectations, didn't do well in 97. Then the following year, they went to the World Series, the furthest they've ever gone. So
yeah,
I think this is going to be the year that we take a huge step forward.
Hopefully. You kind of mentioned this earlier, but talk a bit more about you being in that trade Hosmer camp. Would you be willing to attach, a Luis Campusano to that to get him out? Or is it something where you're willing just to take on, the Padres should just take salary, keep some of the salary on, but just don't give up, Robert Hassel or Luis Campusano in a deal?
I'm not trading Robert Hassel for anybody now. I'm not trading CJ Abrams. If anybody I'm trading Mackenzie Gore or Campusano, maybe Campusano, because I do like Campusano a lot. But there's been a trend where these catchers are top prospects, but then they don't really pan out in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw him struggle last year. I know he came up really early, but there's already that, how I said AJ Preller just gives up on players. I'm thinking it's going to be Campusano, if anybody, that's going to be attached with Hosmer.
Yeah, that's just because, that Jorge Alfaro deal really kickstarted me thinking that Campusano is going to be gone. And I think the only way that he would be gone is in a Hosmer deal to attach him to a bad contract, because why would you trade him, it's just singularly, like just trading him, what are you going to get back for that? They don't need a top. What outfielder is there available, power hitting outfielder, if they don't get a Bryan or a Castellanos that's available, that would be, good enough to trade Campusano for. But just with that, just trading for Alfaro was just kind of weird for me. I don't know about you.
He was tied obviously to the Texas Rangers. That's another thing that Preller's never going to get over. But one thing I would say is, I've seen a lot of things on Twitter when people are like, oh, we need to just DFA Hosmer. That is probably the dumbest thing you could possibly do. Yeah. Because why would you just eat the money when he could just be a bench? He's not the worst bench bat. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Not saying that I want a bench bat worth 100 whatever million he got.
Yeah.
But I'm saying if you cut him, you get absolutely nothing. And the only way I would trade a prospect is if you're getting a lot of money back in return, or you're getting a player back in return. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you mentioned with Hosmer on the bench. They did it last year, and it was Cronenworth's great at first. I think that if they don't find, if there's no DH, which I think that there would be, I wouldn't be confident in having Hosmer, be the DH if there is a full-time DH, but if there's not one, having him on the bench, like that's not even like the worst option. If you can't find exactly what you want on the trade market, like he does have power, and I'd rather have him up there, to be honest, in a power situation, even if he will strike out or ground out to second, than a Ha-Sung Kim, because I know he can at least, there's a chance that he's going to hit one into the gap or hit it over the fence. Like Kim, it's not real, like the Reds game, maybe that one last year, but like, he doesn't have that home run power, and that's what the Padres need, really.
Right, and then another thing I like to point out to my buddies when we debate on Hosmer is, I know we hype up these coaches, but that hitting coach that we just hired, his specialty is launch angle, and that's exactly what Hosmer needs. If he could just fix Hosmer, that would be the biggest win of the offseason.
Yeah.
To just get that swing just a little bit, going a little bit up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If he could,
because it's not even – yeah, it's not even like people want to point to launch angle leading to more home runs. It's not even that. It's in runner on third situations, two out or one out, and you ground up to second, that guy can't move in and score. you have launch angle, you have a fly out to right instead of a ground out, and there's another run. Those add up.
Right. And then that's another thing too with Tatis is he's going to mature this year. I think last year when he was chasing the 100 RBIs, he would swing out of his shoes trying to hit a bomb. I think he's going to mature into like, I think Manny's going to get him into this zone of mind where just get the run in. Don't try to hit a home. You don't need to hit a home run every single time. And I think that's a lot of where the struggles came from last year with the Padres is I feel like Grisham got into some balls early in the year and then he just tried to yank the ball a lot. Cronenworth had a good year last year, obviously an all-star year, but I feel like he was trying to pull the ball a little bit too much rather than spraying the ball. And his average went down a little bit. Not that it was terrible, but it went from around a 300, hovering around 300 to 260s, 270s.
Yeah. He went from a big, I think at the beginning of the year, if I remember correctly, he had a big stretch of time where he like didn't strike out and then those strikeouts came. So I think, I don't think he played into it, but I think the Crone Zone thing kind of did play into it a little bit with pulling and pulling the ball. But I think that, I mean, as we move just through this offseason after the lockout, like the big priority obviously is power. But if power doesn't come, and I was big on Abasso Garcia, he went to Miami. But if that power doesn't come somehow and they bring back Tommy Pham and they sign someone else, I think Michael Berdar, like you mentioned, that's going to be a huge factor. Like, can he do something with Hosmer? Do something with Pham. He had a little bit more ground outs. Just do something, you know, relax Grisham a little bit. Find some power somehow in the catching position, because if they could find any power in Nola and if he could stay healthy, I mean, that would be huge. We don't know what Alfaro's role is going to be. And if I don't see them carrying four guys. I don't see Campusano staying in AAA all year either. So I think that, and I don't see him being a DH, to be quite honest, either, or any of those four catchers. So I think that moving Campusano or moving one of the catchers is probably going to happen. But I think that someone else that there's talk of being moved, but not as much as Hosmer, is Myers. I think that they should just ride it out. You know, he's been here. Give him another chance to win for San Diego. He's been here longest tenure of Padre. He was here when they, you know, choked that build up with Kemp and Upton and everyone. And then he was here through all the rebuild years. So I think it's only fair. It's only 1 year. It's not as bad as Hosmer. I think they should, you know, ride Myers is out.
And another thing I haven't heard from anyone is it's your last year with Myers contract wise. You could bring him back if you want, but I think if him and Hosmer could just play first base, it's a very expensive platoon, but Myers had his best year when he was playing first base.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, and I think he's super athletic still. He could still move well, and he's a better fielder at first base than Eric Hosmer.
Right.
In my opinion.
I think the only problem in that though is who is going to play the outfield then. So now you have Grisham and no one else if Myers is going to platoon at first. I know you could play him in the outfield a little bit, but if you're talking about platooning him at first with him being a righty, Haas being a lefty, who's going to play the outfield? Profar is not an everyday outfielder, and I don't see them signing multiple power-hitting outfielders. Maybe like a Nelson Cruz for the DH, but not two power-hitting outfielders.
What I'm trying to say is that would be worst-case scenario in my mind, but it also would make room for C.J. Abrams to play the outfield, which
yeah. –
I think he's athletic enough to play the outfield, whether it's left or right. And I think it would be left because I don't think he has a very good arm from what I saw in spring training last year. That solves the problem where you're like, what am I going to do with Jake Cronenworth and CJ Abrams? It's clogged right there. That was the whole reason you got rid of Adam Frazier. And I just think Abrams can play the outfield. But that's worst case scenario. Like I said,
yeah, and Abrams, I don't think Abrams is going to be ready at the beginning of the year anyway. So
I think he would have been, but that injury set him back. And I was thinking if he played fall ball, he might have a shot, but he's definitely going to start the year in double A or triple A, whichever it is.
Yeah. We talked about Brian and Castellanos a little bit. Who would you rather sign, Brian or Castellanos?
Man, see, the San Diegan in me wants to say Chris Bryant, but I want to say Castellanos because I just feel like he, man, it's really tough because they're pretty even. I would just say Castellanos because I know Bryant's had some injury troubles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He did fall off a little bit at the end of last year. Not that it was crazy, but I mean, the Giants were just having a crazy year. Everyone was having their best year. And he would sit the bench a couple of games. I mean, he wasn't always the starter.
Right.
But I think I would go with Castellanos, even though I think Castellanos, when he gets this big deal, he might struggle in his first year like a lot of guys do.
Yeah, I think the way that it's trending, I'd rather go Bryant. I think that I know Bryant, he's Boris, right? I think he's a Boris age client. So maybe that's not a big deal then, but I think that Castellanos is probably going to get overpaid just because he's had a really good year last year, obviously better than Bryant, at least power wise. I think that I'm big on versatility, and you know, we've been talking about who's going to play the outfield, who can play the, you know, multiple positions. That's huge. He can play third. He can play short. He could probably play short a little bit.
I mean, first base too.
Yeah, he can play first. He can play all three outfield positions. He likes center field. I mean, so that's what he said. And Castellanos can't do that. Bryant can DH if you need him to. So I think that the versatility is a big reason why I would go Bryant. And I think that Castellanos is going to get more, I don't know about more years, but he's certainly going to get a higher AAV. That would be the only reason. And, you know, with the Tatis contract coming in, you know, he's getting higher pay. He's going to be higher paid now moving forward. You want an extension for Musgrove. What about Snell, Darvish a couple years down the line? I think that while we really want that power outfield bat, I think that having more flexibility with that power bat is, you know, that would be the best scenario.
Right. And I do agree that Castellanos is definitely going to get overpaid. I feel like Bryant's more of a winner too, if you would ask me. I mean, Castellanos did it in a very small ballpark last year as well. We have to take that into account. And Bryant has had success at Petco, hitting a home run in the All-Star game, just being around San Diego. I mean, it's really close with me. The reason I said Castellanos is because I know he could hit a bunch of doubles. And Bryant's swing is more of a launch angle type swing. But really, it's either one. It's pretty much 50-50 for me.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, I'd be happy with either one, obviously, you know, because they just need that power. You know, that they're just desperate for power, because where are you going to get it outside Machado and Tatis? Because Cronenworth, I don't see him hitting that at many home runs every year. Myers obviously only has one more year, and he's like 17 home run guy. We're talking, we need like a 30 home run guy, and Bryant's done that in his career. Castellanos obviously did that last year. So just again, the ideal offseason, I guess that's kind of my last question here. The ideal offseason obviously is getting that power outfield bat, addition by subtraction, obviously with Hosmer. But Carrot what else is that? Yeah.
I don't think Yu Darvish needs a personal catcher with a 4 ERA, if you ask me.
Right. I think that's true. But also I would attribute kind of some of his injuries to that ERA last year. Yeah. And I would also think about Musgrove. I think Musgrove doesn't need a personal catcher, but he obviously succeeded really well with Caratini last year. Mm-hmm. What would be your ideal offseason?
I mean, they filled out that coaching staff pretty nicely, and they're making moves in the developmental system. I really think that was the main thing. But on the 26-man roster, they've filled out this bullpen a little bit. I like the way they've done that. I don't know about the signing from what was the guy's name from Japan?
Robert Suarez.
Was that it? The starter?
Oh, Nick Martinez. Yeah, Nick Martinez. Yeah. I didn't agree with that one either. 4 years.
I don't know about that one. But I mean, if he could have, I mean, I saw that he shortened up his arm slot.
Yeah,
makes him throw harder. Everybody knows that. If he could have a good year, that would be a steal. I really like what they've done so far. If they can't sign one of these huge big time Bryant or Castellanos outfielders, I would really be cool with Jock Peterson and Myers platooning in right.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind if they brought Pham back, coming off the bench mainly. I don't know if I could watch another year of him starting, but I do think Jock Peterson, whether he's starting in left field or platooning with Myers in right, I think that would be a big move as well.
Yeah, I think – what about Conforto? People bring up him. I'm not a big fan of him. Obviously, another Boris guy, and Boris is saying how much interest there is. It kind of feels like a Boris Hosmer situation again, where he's just lying about the interest because he had a terrible year last year. And while he's good at defense – I don't know. There's just something about him where it's like,
I agree.
I wouldn't go all in on him. Like,
I wouldn't go all in on Conforto, especially when the Mets are dangling Jeff McNeil out there.
Yeah.
That's another option. He had a bad year last year, but I mean, bad year. What, you hit 250? That's not terrible. But his other years, he was up towards the leaders in the National League in hits. So, I mean, right. I would be completely fine with him as well.
Yeah. All right. This has been fun. Episode 84 of the Talking Friars podcast with Jacob Redondo, Ben Fadden here. Thanks so much for listening, watching, and until next time, let's go Padres.